inner motion and development. In this world, an individual advances forward by using his organs of motion, the legs. Once a person has achieved this goal, he uses his organs of acquisition, the hands. Spiritual organs are opposite to ours. An individual can ascend the stairs only if he has consciously rejected all support of reason. In addition, an individual can attain the purpose of creation only by raising his hands and by giving rather than by taking. The purpose of creation is in bestowing pleasure upon a person. Why then does the Creator lead us to this goal by such a painful path? A human being has been created by the perfect Creator. The attribute of ultimate perfection is the state of rest, for movement is induced by a lack of something or by an attempt to reach the desirable. A human being also likes to rest and is only willing to sacrifice it if one suffers from a lack of something vital, such as food or warmth, etc. The lack of something vital causes a person to act. The more an individual suffers from the lack of what he wants, the readier he is to make greater and greater efforts in order to obtain it. Therefore, if the Creator makes one suffer from the lack of the spiritual, a person will be compelled to make an effort to reach it. Once a person has attained the spiritual, which is the purpose of creation, that person will experience the pleasure that the Creator prepared for him. For this reason, those who wish to advance spiritually do not consider the suffering they undergo due to their egoism as punishment, but only as manifestations of the Creator's good will to help them, so they view the suffering as a blessing rather than a curse. Only after having achieved the spiritual will a person understand what it really is and what pleasures are found in it, because until that time, a person will only suffer from the lack of it. The difference between the material and the spiritual is in the fact that the lack of material pleasures causes a person to suffer, while the lack of spiritual pleasures does not. Therefore, in order to bring a person to experience spiritual pleasures, the Creator imparts to a person a sensation of suffering from the lack of spiritual sensations. But when experiencing material pleasures, an individual will never reach the complete, infinite fulfillment that is present even in the smallest of spiritual pleasures. As soon as an individual begins to acquire a taste for the spiritual, there is a danger that one might receive the pleasures from experiencing the spiritual as an egoistic desire, and consequently move farther away from the spiritual. The reason for such a turn of events is that a person begins to pursue the spiritual due to finding a much greater pleasure in this pursuit than one had experienced in his entire distasteful life. At that point, he no longer has a need for faith, the basis of all spirituality, for he clearly sees that it is worth doing for its own benefit. But the Creator applies this approach only to beginners, in order to attract them and correct them. The approach is similar to the way a mother teaches her child to walk. The better the child can walk on his own, the further away she moves. Each of us feels that he knows better than anyone else what he should do and what's good for him. This feeling stems from the fact that in an egoistic state, a person perceives only the self and nothing else. Therefore, a person sees himself as the wisest since only he knows what the self desires at each particular moment of his life. The Creator rules our world in strict accordance with material laws of nature. Therefore, there's no possibility to get around these laws or to counteract them. If one jumps off a cliff, one will fall to one's death. If one's deprived of oxygen, one will suffocate, and so on. The Creator has confirmed such laws of nature in order to make us understand that survival takes effort and caution. In the spiritual world, where a person cannot foresee the consequences of events and does not know the laws of survival, he must at the very outset understand that the principal law, which cannot be evaded, just as the laws of nature in our world cannot be evaded, states that one cannot be guided by sensations of pleasure, since it is not pleasure, but altruism, that determines whether a spiritual life is beneficial or harmful. Light, that which emanates from the Creator and is perceived by us as immense pleasure. Comprehending the pleasure or perceiving the Creator, which is actually one and the same thing, for it is not Him we perceive, but the light reaching us, is the purpose of creation. Faith, the power that gives an individual confidence in the possibility of attaining a spiritual life, coming alive after being spiritually dead. The more clearly an individual realizes that he is spiritually dead, the more strongly he feels a need for faith. Prayer, effort made by an individual, particularly in his heart, to perceive the Creator and to implore Him to grant him confidence in the possibility of attaining a spiritual life. Any work, any exertion of effort, and any praying is possible only if the Creator is concealed from human beings. A genuine prayer asks the Creator to grant one the strength to counter egoism with closed eyes, without the Creator revealing Himself to the person, since this is the highest reward. A person's level of spirituality is defined by his willingness to proceed selflessly. When a person gains confidence in his own altruistic strength, he can gradually begin also to experience pleasure for the sake of the Creator. For by doing so, a person is pleasing the Creator. Since it is the Creator's will to bestow pleasure on a person, this congruity of wishes brings them closer together. Apart from the pleasure awarded one by perceiving the light of the Creator, an individual also experiences the infinite pleasure from perceiving the Creator's stature, that is, from one's union with the ultimate perfection. Attaining this pleasure is the purpose of creation. Since egoism, our desire to receive, is our essence, it predominates on all levels of nature, from the atomic molecular one to the hormonal, the animal level, and all the way up to the highest systems of human reasoning and the subconscious, including our altruistic desires. A person is incapable of deliberately opposing it in anything. Therefore, a person who wants to escape the power of egoism must act contrary to the desires of his body and his reason in all that pertains to his advance towards the spiritual, despite being unable to see any benefit for oneself. Otherwise, one will never transcend the limits of our world. In the Kabbalah, the principle of work is known as force him till he says, I want. Once the Creator helps a person by imparting to him his own nature, then the body will itself want to function in the spiritual realm. This condition is called the return, tshuva. The transformation of one's egoistic essence into an altruistic one happens as follows. The Creator generated a desire to gratify oneself and implanted it in human beings. This desire represents egoism, or a black point in one's essence. It is black as a result of the contraction of the light, tzimtzum, which took place at this point, so the light of the Creator has departed from it. The correction of the egoistic essence takes place with the aid of a screen, masach, which transforms egoism into altruism. We're incapable of understanding how such a miraculous transformation can take place until we experience it ourselves. The idea of changing the general law of nature so that suddenly we are able to act where previously we were not able to make the slightest motion seems absolutely incredible to us. In the end, a person discovers that his actions have remained the same as before, and that there's nothing that he can give to the Creator, since the Creator is perfect. His only desire is to fill a person with his perfection. In return for the immense pleasure that a person receives from the Creator, that person is incapable of giving anything back to him, except the thought that though one continues to perform the same acts as before, now he performs them because it pleases the Creator, rather than because it pleases the self. But even this thought is not for the Creator, but for a person, for it allows him to receive unbounded pleasures without being ashamed of getting something for nothing. A person has attained the likeness to the Creator by becoming an altruist. He can now receive infinitely and experience pleasure since it is not for the self. An individual can force himself to commit some physical act, but he cannot change his desires at will, because he cannot do anything that is not for the sake of the self. Kabbalists say that a prayer without the right motivation is like a body without a soul, for actions pertain to the body and thoughts to the soul. If an individual has not yet corrected his thought, or soul, for the sake of which he performs an action, body, then the action itself can be said to be spiritually dead. Everything is comprised of both the general and the particular. The general, the spiritually dead, domim, demonstrates that for all that constitute the masses, there can only be a general movement, but not a particular spiritual movement, for they have no inner need for it. Therefore, there is no particular individual growth, but only the general growth, in accordance with the general providence from above. For this reason, the masses always perceive themselves to be right and perfect. The spiritually organic, somer, means that each individual possesses his own inner movement and development. At this point, one becomes known as man, Adam, as written in the Bible, Adam, a tree in a field. Since spiritual growth requires moving forward and movement can only be caused by a sensation of shortage of something, man is constantly aware of his shortcomings that compel him to seek ways of growing. If he stops at any level of spiritual development, then he's pushed down in his perceptions in order to urge him to move rather than to stand still. If subsequently he rises again, that person rises to a higher level than before. As a result, one either ascends or descends, but no one can stand still, for this state is not characteristic of man. Only those belonging to the masses stand still and cannot fall off their level. Thus, they never experience falling down. Let's mentally divide space with a horizontal line. Above the line is the spiritual world. Below the line, the egotistic world. Those that prefer to act contrary to their reason can exist above the line. These individuals reject earthly reason, even if it gives them an opportunity to know and see everything. They prefer to proceed with their eyes closed by means of faith and to pursue the spiritual, altruistic, instead of egoism. The spiritual levels are defined by the measure of altruism present in them. An individual occupies the spiritual level that corresponds to his spiritual qualities. Those above the line are able to perceive the Creator. The higher one is, the stronger the perception. Higher or lower position is determined by the screen within each person. This screen reflects the direct egotistic desire that can be derived from the light of the Creator. The light above the line is called Torah. The screen, or the line separating our world from the spiritual one, is called a barrier, machzah. Those who pass this barrier never again descend spiritually to the level of our world. Below this line is the realm of egoism. Above the line, the realm of altruism. Advancing toward altruistic pleasure. Azalot is the world of complete perception and unification with the Creator. An individual gradually rises to the world of Azalot, acquiring altruistic qualities and having reached the world of Azalot, i.e. having acquired in full the ability to give, and even standing on its lowest step, one starts receiving for the sake of the Creator. A person does not destroy his desire to experience pleasure, but alters the form of his essence by changing the reason for which he seeks pleasure. By gradually replacing egoism with altruism, an individual rises accordingly until he receives everything that one is entitled to receive in accordance with the root of one's soul, Shorash Neshama, which originally was part of the last level of Malchut of the world Azalot, but as a result of correction has risen to the state of complete unification with the Creator, and in the process received 620 times more than what is possible prior to entering the human corporal body. All the light, the entire pleasure that the Creator wants to impart to the creations, is known as the common soul of all the creations, Shekhinah. The light allotted to each of us, the soul of each of us, is part of that common soul. Each individual should receive this part as one corrects one's desires. An individual can perceive the Creator, one's own soul, only after one has corrected one's desire for pleasure. This desire is known as the vessel of the soul, the kli. That is, the soul consists of the vessel and the light, which comes from the Creator. If a person has totally replaced one's egoistic vessel with an altruistic one, then this vessel merges completely with the light, for it has acquired its characteristics. Thus, a person becomes equal to the Creator and absolutely merges with him in qualities. In the process, the person experiences everything that exists in the light and fills it. There are no words in our language to describe this state. For this reason, it is said that the sum total of all pleasures in this world is but a spark from the infinite fire of the joy that the soul experiences during its unification with the Creator. One can ascend on the ladder only in accordance with the law of the middle line, Kav Emitzeh. This principle can be briefly put as, the person who is happy with what he has is considered rich. A person should be content with as much as he understands Kabbalah. The most important is for a person to realize that by learning Kabbalah, he starts doing good deeds before the Creator. When one carries out his will, he feels as if he carried it out to the utmost. The latter sensation awards a person with an immense happiness, as though he has received the greatest lot in the world. An individual has this feeling because he places the Creator above himself as the King of the universe. Therefore, he's happy to have been singled out among billions by the Creator who, through books and teachers, has let the person know what he wants from this person. This spiritual state is known as the longing to give, hafetz chesed. In it, the qualities of a person coincide with the qualities of the spiritual object known as bina. But this state does not represent the perfection of a human being, for he does not utilize his reason in such a process of self-correction, and is considered to be poor in knowledge, ani bida'at, because he's not aware of the correlation between his actions and their spiritual consequences, i.e., he acts without knowing what he's doing, guided only by faith. In order to commit spiritual acts consciously, a person must invest a lot of effort into realizing that his thoughts need to be for the sake of the Creator. At this point, one begins to feel that he is not ascending spiritually, but on the contrary, every time he observes something, he sees that he's farther than ever from possessing appropriate intentions, to please the Creator to the same extent as the Creator desires to impart pleasure to the person. In this state, a person should not criticize his state further than the level that allows that person to remain content with perfection. This state is called the middle line, Kav Emitzei. Gradually building up knowledge with the left line, Kav Smo, he achieves total perfection. Once again, let us analyze the work that takes place in the middle line. A person must begin his spiritual ascent by being in accordance with the right line, which represents a sense of perfection in the spiritual, the happiness with his lot, the desire to carry out the will of the Creator selflessly and sincerely. It must be asked, how much pleasure does one derive from his spiritual quest? An individual considers any amount sufficient because he's convinced that the Creator controls everything in the world, and whatever one feels during his spiritual quest, it must be so desired by the Creator. Whatever his condition may be, it must ensue from the Creator. Thus, the mere realization of divine rule and of spiritual perfection is sufficient to make a person happy, to give him a sensation of his own perfection, and to induce one to thank the Creator. But this state lacks the left line, in which a person checks his own condition, heshen nefesh. This inner task is opposite to the work done in the right line, where the main focus is on glorifying the spiritual in the Creator, irrespective of oneself or of one's own condition. When a person starts checking how serious his attitude towards the spiritual is, and how close to perfection one is, then a person sees that he's immersed in his petty egoism and cannot lift a finger for the sake of others or of the Creator. Having discovered the evil in the self, an individual must strive to oust that evil and must apply the utmost effort to this task. One must also pray to the Creator for help as soon as he sees that he is unable to transform himself by his own effort. Thus, there become two opposite lines in a person. By the right line, a person feels that all is in the power of the Creator, and therefore it is perfect. So one does not wish for anything and is therefore happy. By the left line, a person feels that one has nothing whatsoever to do with the spiritual, that one has not made any progress, that he's still encased in the shell of his egoism just as before, and that he does not ask the Creator for help in coming out of that state. Having discovered his own evil, a person nonetheless decides to dispense with his common sense because it attempts to dissuade him from engaging in the hopeless task of correcting his egoism. A person should continue to thank the Creator for whatever state the person is in, sincerely thinking that this state is perfect. He should also continue to be happy, just as he was prior to checking this state. If a person can manage to follow this, he will advance along the middle line. Thus, it is crucial to ensure that he should not go overboard in being critical of himself by excessively following the left line. It is also important to remain in the content state of the middle line. Only then will a person be able to enter the spiritual realm with both feet, so to say. There are two levels, not to be confused with the four levels of desires, inanimate, organic, animal, and speaking, two levels of human development, an animal and a human being. As we can observe in the animal nature, an animal continues to live in the same state as it was born. It does not develop. The qualities that were accorded to an animal on the day of its birth are sufficient for the entire duration of its existence. The same can be said of an individual that belongs to this level of development. A person remains the same as one was during his upbringing. All changes that take place in the life of such a person are quantitative in nature. The same cannot be said of the human being type. In this state, a person is born as an egoist. At some point in one's life, that person discovers that he is an egoist and then aspires to correct himself. If a person truly wishes to earn the revelation of the Creator, then, one, this must be the person's strongest desire so that he should feel no other desires. In addition, this desire must be permanent, for the Creator is eternal and his will to bestow good is constant. Thus, if a person wants to come closer to the Creator, he must resemble the Creator in this quality as well. His desires must be constant, too. They cannot change depending on circumstances. Two, he must acquire altruistic desires. One should devote all his thoughts and desires to the Creator. This level is called chesed, or kadnut. Eventually, one will come to deserve the light of faith, which will give him confidence. Three, a person must earn the complete and perfect knowledge of the Creator. The consequences of one's actions are determined by one's spiritual level. However, there will be no difference between the spiritual levels if the light of the Creator shines, since the vessel and the light of the soul are received simultaneously by the person from the Creator. Hence, the received knowledge is perceived by him to be perfect. Usually, a person is in total accord with his body. The body dictates its desires to the person and pays him back for his labors of letting him experience pleasure. Pleasure, in itself, is spiritual. But in our world, it has to be connected to some material carrier, like food, sex, or music, to enable a person to experience it. Even though inside ourselves we feel pure pleasure, we're incapable of detaching it completely from its carrier. Different people enjoy different things, i.e., different types of pleasure carriers. But pleasure in itself is spiritual, even though we experience it in our brains as an effect of electric impulses. Theoretically, it is possible to fully simulate a wide range of pleasures by applying electric impulses to the brain. Since we're accustomed to receiving various pleasures in the form of their material carriers, this pure pleasure will recreate the images of various carriers in a person's memory so that in his mind he will hear music, taste food, and so on. The aforesaid makes it clear that a person and his body service each other. Therefore, if a person feels that his body agrees to work, he knows that it expects to be rewarded by pleasure. Escaping from disagreeable situations can also be considered a kind of pleasure. In any case, any correlation between the performed work and the reception of pleasure or a reward is a definite indication that the person performed an egoistic act. On the other hand, if a person feels that the body is resisting and is asking, why work, then it means that the body does not foresee a greater degree of pleasure in the future than it already possesses now, or at least a sufficient increase of pleasure to overcome the propensity to remain in the state of rest. Thus, it doesn't see any benefit in altering its state. But if a person decides to abandon the considerations of the body and elects to concentrate on improving the condition of his soul, then naturally the body will not be able to make even the slightest move without the prospect of personal benefit for itself. He will not be able to force it to work. Thus, only one solution will be open to him, to appeal to the Creator for help in advancing forward. The Creator does not replace a person's body, nor alter one's nature. He doesn't make miracles to change the fundamental laws of nature. However, in response to a true prayer, the Creator gives a person a soul, the power to act on the principles of truth. When people receive egoistic pleasures, everybody cannot be happy at the same time. For egoistic pleasures center not only on what we have, but also on what others do not have, because all pleasures are comparative and relative. For this reason, it's impossible to build a fair society on the basis of reasonable egoism. The erroneous nature of such utopias has been proven throughout history, in ancient communities, in the former USSR, and in other attempts to build socialism. It is impossible to satisfy each and every member of an egoistic society because every individual always compares himself to others. This is best seen in small settlements. Thus, the Creator, who is always willing to award everyone boundless pleasure, set down one condition, that this pleasure should not be limited by the desires of the body. The pleasure is received only in the desires that are independent from the desires of the body and are known as altruistic, ashpa'a. The Kabbalah is a sequence of spiritual roots, proceeding from one another in accordance with immutable laws, merging and pointing towards their single common purpose, the comprehension of the Creator's greatness and wisdom by the creations of this world. Kabbalistic language is closely related to the spiritual objects and their acts, thus it can only be studied in connection with examining the process of creation. The Kabbalah touches upon certain issues, which are then discovered by those looking for spiritual perception. There is no concept of time, but only a cause and effect chain, where every effect becomes, in its turn, the cause of the next effect, the creation of a new act or object. In principle, what we take for time, even in our world, is actually our perception of inner cause and effect processes. Even science maintains that time, as well as space, are relative concepts. A place, or space, is a desire for pleasure. An action is either the receiving of pleasure or its rejection. In the beginning, that is, prior to the creation, nothing existed but the Creator. He cannot be denoted by any other name, for any other name implies a certain perception of the object. But the only thing that we perceive in him is the fact that he created us. Thus we can only address him as our creator and maker, etc. The Creator transmits light. The light represents his desire to generate a creation and endow this creation with a sense of being pleased by him. Only this single quality of the light that issues from the Creator gives the basis of our judgment of the Creator. To be more precise, the perception of the light does not permit us to make judgments about the Creator alone, but only about the perceptions that he wants to incite in us. For this reason, we refer to him as someone who wants to please us. This pleasure is not derived from the light alone, but is produced in us by the effect of the light on our organs of spiritual sensation. Similarly, any piece of meat does not, in itself, contain the pleasure that one feels when one tastes it. Only by coming in contact with the sensory organs can an object produce related sensations of pleasure in us. Any act, either spiritual or physical, consists of a thought and an action that embodies the thought. The thought of the Creator is to bestow pleasure on his creations. Consequently, he awards us pleasure. This act is called giving for the sake of giving. It is called a simple act because its purpose corresponds to its direction. The creation was generated to be egoistic in nature, meaning that a person has no other goal but to attain pleasure. An individual can either engage in receiving or in giving as part of his pursuit for the desired objects, but one's ultimate goal always remains to receive, even if physically one gives something. If the act is characterized by the same direction as the goal, that is, if the end of an action is to receive, and the end of the goal is to receive, then such an action of a person is referred to as a simple act. If, on the other hand, the direction is to give, but the purpose is to receive, then the act is referred to as a complex one, because its purpose and its direction diverge in their intentions. We're incapable of imagining the desires and the realms of the desires' effects beyond space. Therefore, we can only imagine the Creator as a spiritual force that fills space. The Kabbalists say that the Creator originally designed human beings with the ability to engage only in simple acts. However, people have complicated the original design. The higher one ascends on the spiritual ladder, the simpler the laws of creation become, because the basic fundamental categories are simple, not complex. But because a person fails to perceive the source of creation, and instead only sees its remote consequences, he views the laws of creation in our world as being comprised of conditions and limitations, thus being complicated. Since authentic Kabbalistic books contain hidden light, which stems from the author in the course of the work on the book, since authentic Kabbalistic books contain hidden light, which stems from the author in the course of the work on the book, it is vital to have the right intention while studying them, namely a will to receive the Creator. It is also very important while studying to pray for receiving the spiritual intellect and the understanding that the author possessed, so to seek a bond with him and to address him. Thus, it is also essential to refrain from reading the works of other authors, especially those who also deal with the spiritual worlds. The reason for this is that these authors may influence the reader as well. A person who wishes to acquire spiritual knowledge must establish a special daily routine. One must shield oneself from extraneous influences, irrelevant news, and harmful books. One must avoid contact with other people except when it becomes necessary for work or study, without deliberately shunning them, but keeping one's thoughts continuously in check. A person must think of his work when it is necessary, and the rest of the time he should devote to contemplating the purpose of life. Attaining the purpose of life depends more on the quality of the effort made than on the quantity. One person can pore over the books for days on end, and another can only devote an hour a day to his studies due to the demands of his work and family. Any effort can be measured only in relation to his free time by determining how much a person suffers because he's unable to devote more time to the spiritual. The result is directly proportional to the intensity of the person's intentions. What exactly does he wish to attain by devoting his time to study and self-correction? There are two methods of feeding a child. One method is by force. It brings the child no pleasure, but it still gets him the nourishment necessary for growing and building up his strength. In the Kabbalah, this kind of spiritual nurturing of a person is known as on account of the higher one. However, if the child wishes to grow spiritually, wants to take spiritual nourishment of his own accord, for one has developed an appetite for it, realized the necessity or experienced the pleasure from the light, then not only does one grow spiritually, but one also enjoys the process of living, that is, of developing spiritual perceptions. An acute sensation produced in a person by his awareness of good and evil is known in the Kabbalah as the process of nurturing. Just as a mother raises her infant to her breast and gives it food, so a Kabbalist is given the light contained in an upper spiritual object so that one clearly sees and feels the gulf between good and evil. And then, just as the mother takes the infant away from her breast, so a Kabbalist loses the bond with the higher source, as well as the clarity of the distinction between good and evil. This process is designed to induce a person to pray to the Creator for acquiring the same capabilities for perceiving Kelim, the good and evil, as the higher source. An individual receives both his egoism and his altruism from above. The difference is in the fact that he receives egoistic desires upon birth, while the altruistic ones require that a person should persistently ask for them. First, an individual must reach a state in which one wants to please the Creator, the same way as the Creator pleases the individual, irrespective of one's egoistic desires, ascending the levels of the worlds, Bereah, Yetzirah, and Asiya. Then one should determine what will please the Creator. Consequently, a person will see that he can only please the Creator by experiencing pleasure. This is called receiving for the sake of the Creator, and denotes the level of the world of Azilot, attaining the different degrees of intensity of the desire to give selflessly to the Creator is called the steps of the world, Bereah, Yetzirah, Asiya. Acquiring the power to receive pleasures from the Creator for his sake is known as reaching the level of the world Azilot. Bayit Midrash is the place where people learn to demand of the Creator the spiritual strength. There they also learn to demand the perception of the goal of creation, as well as the perception of the Creator. Since we, our body, our egoism, strive naturally towards all that is larger and stronger than ourselves, we must pray for the Creator to reveal himself to us and to let us see our own insignificance as compared to his greatness. Then we will strive towards him naturally, as toward the greatest and the strongest. What matters most for an individual is the importance of his pursuits. For instance, rich people work hard in order to make others envy them. But if wealth was no longer important, they would not be envied anymore, and thus they would have no more incentive to work. Therefore, the most important thing is to realize the importance of perceiving the Creator. There will never come a time when an individual will be able to reach the spiritual realm without any efforts, for these efforts are the vessels for the light. Before the Kabbalist Ari introduced his corrections in this world, It had been somewhat easier to attain the spiritual. However, after Ari opened the way to comprehending the spiritual, it became much harder to give up the pleasures of this world. Prior to Ari, the spiritual ways were closed, and there was no actual readiness from above to confer the light on creations. Ari slightly opened the source of the light. This made it harder for people to battle their egoism, since the egoism became stronger and more sophisticated. This can be schematically illustrated by the following example. Let us suppose that prior to Ari's time, one could obtain 100 units of comprehension. Each effort amounting to one unit would yield one unit of perception. Today, after the corrections were introduced into the world by the Ari, one can obtain 100 units of perception for just one unit of effort. But it is incomparably harder to carry out this one unit of effort. Rabbi Yehuda Ashlag, Baal HaSulam, has introduced such corrections into the world that now an individual cannot deceive oneself thinking that one is perfect, but must follow the path of faith above knowledge. Though the path has become somewhat clearer, this generation is incapable of making the required quantity and quality of effort the way the previous generations could, despite the fact that the perception of individual shortcomings is clearer than before. But this generation does not elevate the spiritual to the appropriate level of their cognition. That is, above the material, the way the previous generations did, when the majority of people were willing to do anything for the sake of spiritual ascent. A significant correction was introduced into the world by the Kabbalist Baal Shem Tov. Even the masses could feel a slight increase in the amount of the spiritual in the world. For a while, it even became easier to reach the spiritual for those who desired it. In order to select worthy students for his Kabbalistic group, Baal Shem Tov instituted Amarot, a division of Jewish society into sections, with each section having a Kabbalist as their own spiritual leader. These leaders, Admorim, selected individuals who they deemed to be worthy of studying Kabbalah in their cheder, in their rooms, the classes, where they engaged in raising the next generation of Kabbalists and leaders of the people. But the effect of the correction introduced by Baal Shem Tov has passed. So not all leaders of our generation are Kabbalists and are able to perceive the Creator. After the departure of Baal Sulam, our world has been in a state of spiritual degradation, which always precedes the approaching elevation. Perceiving oneself as a being that was created means perceiving oneself as being separate from the Creator. Since as a result of our egoistic nature, we instinctively withdraw from anything that causes us suffering, the Creator uses this to lead us to the good. He removes pleasure from the material world that surrounds us and awards us pleasure only through altruistic acts. This is the path of suffering.